I want to talk about my sister Mary, and I want to talk about the gift of having an older sister like Mary. I had three older sisters. Mary was the middle one. And Mary has had a very clear and positive impact on my life and much of my current happiness, and the happiness that I've experienced since 1969 is due to her influence on me. I'll talk about two main points, but in just a few minutes. Officially, Mary died on May 2, 2011 in Saugus, Massachusetts. Unofficially, and in my opinion, life is like a seesaw, and with life force being added on one end and life force being lost on the other end. We gain life force and we lose life force through the energy exchange experiences that we have throughout life. It isn't so much the experiences as it is the interpretations and the conclusions we make about ourselves in regard to those experiences. We've all seen and read obituaries that make statements like this: so-and-so lost his or her life on such and such a date. I don't think that is at all accurate. I think that we lose life little by little, and sometimes not so little, by the hurts and the wounds that we suffer at other people's hands and words, and our own words and hands, what we say to ourselves over the course of those years. And over periods of time, like a balloon or a tire with a slow leak, we go flat unless we have become aware of how to infuse life and heal the holes where we've been losing life force. If we can heal the holes in our being, change our beliefs, our viewpoints, then all kinds of good things can accrue to us. Mary was the second of seven children. She was the only child in the family with dark hair, in a family that put great emphasis on red hair and blonde hair. She was the second girl in a family that was deeply desirous of having a male. Mary was sandwiched between an older, more dramatic red-haired sister and a younger blonde sister who had serious heart problems. Few circumstances would be more conducive to being ignored and underappreciated than the circumstances that Mary was in. Competing for attention and life force shouldn't be a little girl's job, but it was. Add to the stresses that, at the time she was born, World War II was in progress, a young couple was struggling to make ends meet, and, as Catholics were urged to do, they were having child after child. And for those parents, even in the easiest times, their serious childhood traumas had them imbalanced emotionally, so fully functioning in life was more of a challenge than they needed. The fourth and fifth children were males, the sixth a female, the seventh a male. Mary's chances in that lineup of getting an equal share of life force in the home environment was not going to happen. Mary was very athletic. She played sports. She could touch her toes probably up until just a year or so ago. Unbelievable. She was a high school cheerleader. Now, all of that sounds like a good thing, but later on, I think it worked to her disadvantage. Her older sister, Daphne, went to Emerson College for drama in Boston, but she didn't graduate. This fact was real disturbing for our father, who now either wanted not to pay for any children to go to college, or, if they were going to go to college, he wanted to protect his investment. He decided that to protect his investment, he was going to have Mary, who was the next one in line to go to college, undergo extensive aptitude testing in New York City. My father had discovered an institute called Johnson O'Connor that presumably could tell what a person ought to be doing, what would make them happy, and so on. Mary wanted to become a medical doctor, but the results of the testing at Johnson O'Connor Institute in Manhattan indicated that Mary should go to college to become a gym teacher. I think Mary suffered a huge loss of life when she was made to go to a teacher's college in upstate New York to become a gym teacher instead of going into college for pre-med. She left school after 2 years. Our father may have thought it was wise to protect his investment of money, but as it turns out, I don't think he protected his daughter. How does an aptitude test give a clear picture of a person's heart and their willingness to reach deep within to achieve their goals, their persistence, their patience, their commitment to that particular goal? It doesn't. Mary moved to Massachusetts and there met her husband-to-be. She was more alive during those years than ever before. Because of her marriage to Matt Palomino, a warm, kind, and loving man of a Sicilian extraction, Mary's connection to life and life force improved dramatically. And Mary became my mother's most beloved daughter as a result of that, largely because of the change in Mary, as well as Matt being her favorite son-in-law, who was so fantastic and fun and kind and family-oriented. Helping Mary rise from overlooked to the most loved was also the fact that she had three outstandingly wonderful and beautiful children, Arthur, Maria, and Maddie, that my mother loved. They're still beautiful people to this day, and as you might expect, they've added their own children to the mix, also beautiful in so many ways. Mary's husband, Matt, died of cancer before he was 49 years old. He fully expected to die this way, and he talked about it as if it was a fait accompli because a younger brother had died of cancer, and Matt felt it was inevitable. In my opinion, he used his beliefs of the inevitability of cancer to bring it into his experience, but he wouldn't entertain another point of view on that. Maybe out of guilt of surviving his brother? I'm not certain why. But I'll say that when her husband died, a lot of Mary died that at the same time. She lost a lot of life force then. I don't think she was ever the same after that, and she appeared the way she lived, the way she acted, the way she felt, the way she expressed herself, as being less than a whole person when she lost Matt. The living that she did do, she did for her children. She lived for her children and not for herself. And over the years, whenever I asked this question in either a phone call or when I was seeing her face to face, I would say, "Mary, how are you? How are you doing?" And she would answer that question with the news that made her so proud about Arthur, Maria, and Maddie. And then she would continue on. And I said, no, what about you, though? What about you? And with a little hesitation, she'd go right back and tell me about the things of her children that she was most pleased and proudest about, how happy they were, how they were doing in school, and so on. To go back in time, when Mary was a teenager, and I was 6 years younger than she was, she would take me along when she would go dress shopping down in the village, about a quarter of a mile from where we lived. And after we'd go shopping, we'd stop at a little delicatessen called Paradise Sweets, and we'd have a sandwich and a milkshake, and we would talk. And it was during those times that she would say to me that she didn't really like children. At that time, I thought she meant she didn't really like children. Now I know she was referring to the other six children in our family, not the children in general. She didn't like being disadvantaged in a crowd of children, and who would be? And that being disadvantaged, being treated unequally, was more a reflection on our parents' lack of emotional intelligence and lack of management skills than any one of us being bad children deserving of inequality. Mary graduated from college, got a master's degree, and as you might have guessed, ended up becoming an elementary school teacher with kids. Besides her own three kids, over the years she became devoted to hundreds and hundreds of kids. She used to tell me, without bragging, no hint of bragging, of situations in which she reached out to children in her classes whose families were obviously not providing adequate love, attention, or nurturing to these kids. Now, when I look back at her stories, I know where her compassion came from. Seems to me that maybe compassion only comes from being earned through personal suffering. And I can understand where Mary would have gotten compassion for children that were not attended to. Let me tell you how two separate events, managed, directed, and influenced by Mary, changed my life for the better. Mary was dating a boy named Richie when she was 18 years old, and I was 12. Richie had a younger sister who was also 12 years old, and her name was Marianne. One night, Mary and Richie were planning to drive to the Hamptons, the south shore of Long Island. We lived on the north shore, for dinner, but apparently Richie's father thought those two might need chaperones. They ended up taking Marianne and me along as chaperones, so we sat in the back seat dressed in our finest, giggling, listening to rock and roll on the radio, watching them nuzzle closer together as trying to occupy the same seat as they were driving across to the other side of Long Island. That event and a couple others led me at 12 years old to be so in love with Marianne that I thought it was impossible for a 12-year-old boy to have feelings like the feelings I was having. They scared me. They were so intense. I felt like I must have been like a small electric appliance connected to the wrong voltage that was way too much for my wiring and was going to burn me out. And I did what I think all of us in our family did. I tried to shut off my feelings in order to protect me. I think that same mistake is the one that Mary made later on, if she hadn't already done it as she was growing up. 40 years later, I told Marianne that I had always loved her, and we were married about 18 months later. I owe my relationship to the love of my life, to my sister Mary. The second great gift didn't take me so long to recognize. In the summer of 1969, when I was home on leave from the United States Army, my mother invited me over to her house to see what she, Mary, and my younger sister Anne were doing. Out of curiosity, they had tried using a Ouija board, but instead of the planchette, that's the little device that slides across the board, moving from letter to letter or number to number, it began moving as if it were writing out in longhand script. They were doing automatic writing. They took a little cardboard box used for costume jewelry, stuck a pen through it, and two of them, lightly touching it, resting it on a piece of paper, now were writing out longhand. Over the course of the next 5 or 6 nights, when Mary's children were sleeping and my children were sleeping, we would do automatic writing. And the being that we were communicating with was named Julian, who had lived with Mary in France hundreds of years ago, and in this lifetime, his role was to serve as her spirit guide. Because the planchette would move when any two people were lightly touching it, with one exception, if I touched it, it would not move. Me with any other person, it would not move. Any two people, it would move. So, as a result of that, I became the asker of questions. I'd asked about life before we were born and after we died, God, purpose for each of us around the table, the purpose of our children, our roles, the safety of our brother George, who was in Vietnam at that time, asked about Hitler, heaven, hell, Jesus, angels, the events that happened regarding Arthur, and how he was protected by Julian. One day when he and his father were going to go to the beach in Revere, and on and on and on for hours and hours every night for the remainder of my time home. During that period, the sense of divine love and protection was so fantastic that over the course of my life since then, anytime I was inexplicably influenced away from pain or danger, I knew without a doubt where it was coming from. To know, really know, that there is a God that is all-loving and is actively making this love available is an unbelievable gift beyond words. And I owe these feelings, this knowingness, to the three instruments sitting around that table: Mary, my mother, and my sister Anne. And for them making me aware of that truth has given me an unshakable knowing about life before and after this physical form. For some reason, or maybe no reason, Mary didn't use her relationship with Julian. She would never explain why to me. I didn't understand how a person could have such a reassuring connection to a higher consciousness, but instead would choose to worry about things on a daily basis. It saddened me that Mary had this gift that people would do anything, anything to have and to know about, and it could have helped her feel more at peace. But she wouldn't use it. In 1993, while I was taking some spiritual training classes in San Diego, California, one of my classmates, who was a trans-channel is a person that kind of goes into what looks like a sleep state and starts speaking in a different voice, was giving a demonstration. And in order to support him, I went to it. And as he went around asking questions, everybody could ask a single question. All of a sudden, I was told I needed to go public with automatic writing. At first, I was a little bit shocked because I was a businessman, and automatic writing up to that point was a kind of a closet activity that only my closest friends knew about. It wasn't something that was publicly known. But the good news is, in San Diego, this is a very acceptable and normal form of behavior as compared to other places in the United States. So in San Diego or Southern California, over the next 6 years, hundreds of people were able to gain more peace because of the information that was conveyed to them during automatic writing sessions. People who had lost children would come for sessions to try to make sense out of this loss. Psychics used to come for readings just to validate, because they didn't trust themselves to get their own information. And all those people that were helped over those years, my sister Mary made that help possible. In Mary's life, the resistance to feeling emotions or expressing them worked to her disadvantage. She held on to things that no longer served her: multiple illnesses, replacement surgeries, pain, infection, and being overloaded with antibiotics harmed her flow of life force. Because she didn't let go of what didn't serve her, because she didn't access divine support, because she wouldn't risk feeling her deepest feelings and letting them go, she slowly turned down her light until her body stopped working on May 2nd, 2011. Mary died on one day, but she lost life force on many days, just like all of us have. It is our need to replenish our life force, that flow, by connecting to the source of it, however we conceptualize God, is what we need to attend to. If you and I can accept this gift, the need to shift our beliefs, change our beliefs, hope for greater things, let go of what no longer serves us, replenish our life force by this connection to the source of all life force. This could be the greatest gift of all from my sister Mary. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the prayer from letter 8. I've pluralized it. It is from Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know that it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care, and we ask for your care for Mary's soul and Matt's soul and the lives, the body, the work, the careers, and the families of Arthur, Maria, and Matt. Thank you. It is so. Amen.